Aloha, this is Catherine Cruz. Mahalo for joining us. Hawaii Talks on the Conversation on this Aloha Friday, May 29th. It's not over till it's over. The chair of the Office of Hawaiian Affairs isn't giving up on the idea of controlling a broadcast station or two. We hear from Kai Kahele about what's next. We also talk about military land leases and the push by OHA to get a seat at the table when it comes to negotiating over public trust lands, crown lands. We head up to Wailua Town to talk about surfing and meet the new state champions of the girls' division, a bright spot as that community goes through some tough times. And we hear about a Maui-based singing troupe that will get your toes tapping. Have you heard about Keiki Kapuna? From 4 to 100, all ages are welcome. Tuned to the conversation here on Hawaii Public Radio. I'm Catherine Cruz. On a 5-4 vote, the Office of Hawaiian Affairs Board of Trustees gave a thumbs down yesterday on a move to explore a deal to acquire KITV and its sister station, KIKU. However, we got a chance to talk to OHA Chair Kai Kahele this morning in Hilo. He said he is not closing the door on the move to hire someone to do due diligence on a possible purchase of the broadcast stations. So it's not over yet.
This was never just about a television station. It is about whether Native Hawaiians are willing to lead boldly in spaces that shape public understanding and public conversation about issues very important to Native Hawaiians. And we often say when Native Hawaiians thrive, the rest of Hawaii and the broader community thrives. And so this opportunity for OHA to invest and diversify its portfolio into very powerful, transformative ways of multimedia storytelling is important because it not only shapes how the people of Hawaii view us, but also how the world sees us, and most importantly, how we see ourselves and that future. And I will tell you, Catherine, that the vote was a close vote. The conversations we had behind closed doors were very good and thoughtful and deliberate, and I don't think it's dead. I get the sense that my fellow trustees need a little bit more time. They want to do a little bit more due diligence. I think they felt it was a very reasonable proposition. They appreciated the efforts that I did as chair to bring this in front of the board, to think outside the box at something worth pursuing. And I wouldn't be surprised if it comes back in the very near future.
When this initially, broke, folks are wondering, well, how does this work just with the FCC? And then I understand with KIKU that, the programming, right, cultural programming, Japanese language, Filipino, that you could see that down that path for Hawaiians. But, yeah, talk more about how that would work, because you essentially would have an elected board running a broadcast station.
If you think about it, and those are great questions to have. And in a part of our due diligence, would be able to flush that out, right? Because this would be something that is very different. How this is structured, what the governance structure would be really important. One of the things I learned, Catherine, through this process, and I didn't know before, and I'm not sure if many people know, did you know the Green Bay Packers are owned by the people of Green Bay?
No, I did not know that.
It is. It is the only professional NFL football team that is owned by the people of Green Bay. It is a publicly owned football team. And the governance structures behind that are potentially very similar to what we would do here at OHA. And that I learned that by going through the process of a very exhaustive process of attempting to find national firms across the country from the East Coast to the West Coast that would do this type of due diligence for OHA as a government entity, a semi-autonomous one, that has an independence from other branches of government here in Hawaii and is very unique when compared to the other 50 states across the country, where the Office of Hawaiian Affairs would own and control a major media station in Hawaii. And I truly believe that it is quintessentially OHA's mission. The opportunity to have powerful messaging in media is important in a media market that is being consolidated by the most powerful monopolizing billionaires in the country. We see whether it's the Murdochs or the Ellisons that are consolidating media. To have one station owned by a non-billionaire in Hawaii is something I get excited about. I think it's huge for Hawaiians. I think it can create a very inclusive, transparent, integrity-filled public messaging. And it's something that is out of the box, and that's why I like it. And we are, and will be, if the board approves this acquisition or moves to the next step, we are looking for partners that would ultimately want to partner with OHA to acquire this, because we think it's really important. And we are, of course, are working and have been talking to our brothers and sisters in Aotearoa. Indigenous media, Aori TV, is nothing new, and it's a great model that exists in New Zealand, and it's one that we look to maybe follow. And I have a feeling, Catherine, we're going to continue to pursue this, and more to come on that.
Well, you know, I do appreciate thinking outside the box, you know, and full disclosure, because I used to work at KITV, and I'm thinking, well, how does that work with the union? So then do all the employees going forward become, you know, then what, state workers? How does that, you know, play out? And then I was thinking back of the time when PBS Hawaii was attached to the University of Hawaii. So it was a state entity. And then it broke away and became a community licensed station. You know, so turning the stone over, like, how does that work?
And great questions, great possibilities, right? HPR is an example. PBS Hawaii is an example of a publicly owned, nonprofit, not-for-profit entity. I don't know. I mean, those are all things that we would flush out. What we do know is that the Allen Media Group, who we have been in discussions with, I have been in discussions with, and is no secret, is divesting of some of its broadcast stations throughout the country for various different reasons. We know that Mr. Allen acquired KITV and KIQU for $30 million several years ago, and we know that he is in the process of diversifying his portfolio and selling off some of those assets. And for the Office of Hawaiian Affairs to not take this seriously and not take a look at it, not look under the hood, not do the proper due diligence, while also doing it in a transparent way, you know, within our fiduciary duties, making sure our beneficiaries and community understands why we're looking at this, that this is not mission creep. This is actually mission driven. It doesn't drift from OHA's core mission. It augments it. It expands it. That's something that we're really interested in. The opportunity to develop Native Hawaiian workforce leadership pathways in communication and technology, to be able to have a greater visibility and a normalization of Olelo Hawaii and Native Hawaiian values within the public discourse, is something that I think really is important. Communication and controlling the narrative is a powerful tool to advance the interests of Native Hawaiians beyond the Native Hawaiian community. You know, the reality is that Native Hawaiians represent about 22% of the state's overall population of 1.5 million residents. If you look at the different branches of government, that percentage is pretty reflective of Native Hawaiian representation. And so at the end of the day, if we want to move the needle on Native Hawaiian interests, Native Hawaiian values, educating the community and Native Hawaiian culture, we have to look beyond the Native Hawaiian community to the broader community, appeal to that community. And that's what I think this gives us an opportunity to do.
When you say you're talking with partners or looking for others to partner with, are we talking like Hawaiian Council, Kamehameha Schools?
Absolutely. I think all of those partners would be fantastic partners for us to have discussions with. They have obviously different missions and things that are important to them. And this is a unique opportunity for Native Hawaiian serving organizations, and in some cases, our legacy Ali'i Trusts, to be able to partner with the Office of Hawaiian Affairs on something like this.
Have you had discussions with them? on this topic?
If anything, they have been preliminary, you know, nothing serious, because I think it is really important for the OHA board to take a position on whether or not we are moving to the next step. You know, the board authorized myself as the chair to go out and find a valuation firm somewhere across the country that could do this work for us. There's a lot of work that would take to do the proper due diligence of an asset like this, down to even the equipment and the engineering and the retransmission antennas and equipment. All that stuff needs to be done and valued, in addition to the people, the asset, the real estate, the broadcast licenses, the profit and loss current numbers, the projected forecasted earnings, the advertising dollars. There's so much that goes into doing proper due diligence so that trustees at the end of the day can make the best well-informed decision as possible. Does OHA have the resources to do this? Absolutely. We have about $700 million in our Native Hawaiian Trust Fund. But there's a lot of need in our community, and this has to be something that helps meet some of those needs. And so could we do this alone? Yes. But we would love to do this with partners. Do we have the capability to close a deal like this? Yes. The majority of the Board of Trustees has the power to acquire this asset if it chooses to, and we have the resources to do it.
That was OHA Chair Kai Kahele talking about yesterday's vote that went against a plan to hire a third party to explore a possible purchase of local TV station KITV and its sister station KIKU. We will have more from our conversation right after a short break. Let's get back to our conversation with OHA Chair and former Congressman Kai Kahele. He just returned from Washington, D.C. after meetings in our nation's capital, where the focus has been getting a seat at the table when it comes to renegotiating land leases with the military.
We had great conversations both at the Pentagon and through the halls of Congress. We met with some of the most important and influential members of Congress as it relates to the House and Senate Armed Services Committee, both Republican and Democrat. We met with Hawaii's congressional delegation, and our message was clear. The Office of Hawaiian Affairs plays a unique role in the state of Hawaii, unlike any other state or territory in the country. Right? We are a fourth branch of government. We are an independent branch of government. We have statewide elected trustees, just like the Office of Governor, Lieutenant Governor, and our two United States senators. We are fiduciaries to the Public Land Trust that was created by Congress through the Admissions Act of 1959. And as a result, we are a co-trustee, along with the state of Hawaii, on any lands that are included in the Public Land Trust that was created by Congress. OHA did not exist in 1959 when Hawaii became a state. We didn't exist when these leases were executed in 1964. Native Hawaiians didn't have a voice then. We had a very junior congressional delegation with very little leverage because of provisions in the Admissions Act. That is a different story today. OHA does exist. It is in the state's constitution. It was ratified by the people of Hawaii and enacted by the state legislature. We are the primary principal public agency for Native Hawaiian affairs and issues in Hawaii. It is a power given to OHA in the Constitution and in statute that doesn't explicitly exist in any of the other branches of government in Hawaii. And as a result, every military land lease that is expiring between 2028 and 2031 is on lands that are part of the Public Land Trust. And as a result, the Office of Hawaiian Affairs is a co-trustee on these lands. And we must be at the table for any negotiation. We must be a signatory on any future disposition, and we would like that to be explicitly codified by Congress so that we can set the conditions for any future negotiation. We can set the stakeholders that need to be at the table that have statutory and constitutional standing, and that was the message that we delivered to Congress, and we believe that it resonated. And we are hopeful that that language will end up in the latest draft of the National Defense Authorization Act that we feel will be released in the next few weeks.
But given the climate in D.C. right now about Native peoples and, well, you know, you served in Congress. You know how dicey it can be, but you're still hopeful?
I am hopeful, and I'm hopeful because of the conversations we had with both sides in Congress. You know, the executive branch, I think, has its own goals, and executive branches come and go. And this executive branch will be up for re-election in 2028. And so we will see if the political winds change when we get to that point. Right now, we're focused on Congress and the authorizers and the appropriators that have the power through legislation to shape the future and the conditions and the negotiations around this. It resonated with especially Republican members of Congress who value states' rights, right? This is a states' rights issue. And the fact of the matter is that though the federal government enacted the Admissions Act and created a public land trust and returned these unique lands that were stolen from the Kingdom of Hawaii when the monarchy was overthrown on January 17, 1893, these lands are intrinsically tied to Native Hawaiians and the people of Hawaii. The people of Hawaii created OHA to be that voice. At the state level, that's really important. And so many of the Republican members of Congress we met with respected that and acknowledged that and understand why OHA needs to be at the table, because there's a potential that any future disposition that does not have OHA at the table is in legal jeopardy. If you do not set the proper conditions. And so that's a message that we have delivered to the executive branch here. We continue to message that, but we also are not just stopping at the state level. We have taken our advocacy efforts to Washington, D.C., and we will continue to do that through our congressional delegation and other members of Congress that are sympathetic to OHA's position on this issue. They want a deal. They want something. And what we are saying is you cannot have anything if you don't have OHA at the table and Native Hawaiians at the table. You're setting yourself up for failure. And I don't know how many times I have to keep repeating that before people understand that.
All right, so what's next on the landscape?
OHA has created a permitted interaction group, and we have supplemented that permitted interaction group with a 14-member technical advisory group. Some of the smartest legal minds and Native Hawaiian economists and lawyers and cultural practitioners in Hawaii. Also, we have senior military officers that are part of our technical advisory group. So we have the full spectrum of perspectives advising the board. You know, right now our focus is on the upcoming NDAA, the National Defense Authorization Act, that's going to be released soon, to see if there's language in there. We have made our position crystal clear. We oppose condemnation of these lands. The thought of the federal government coming in to condemn thousands of acres of lands out in Hawaii for military training is something that we take very, very seriously, while also ensuring that the permanent alienation of those lands and permanently prohibiting the people of Hawaii and Native Hawaiians from accessing their cultural and ancestral lands is something that we adamantly oppose. So those are two things that we're really pushing on.
That was Kai Kahele, OHA chair, talking about the recent meetings with the Pentagon and others in our nation's capital.
Support for Hawaii Public Radio comes from the Hawaii Department of Transportation, celebrating all graduates this season with wishes for futures that include choosing not to drink and drive.
Apply to join Hawaii Public Radio's Community Advisory Board. Volunteers from across the islands advise HPR on programming and outreach and help shape the future of HPR. Nominate yourself or someone else. Apply by Friday, June 26 at hawaiipublicradio.org/CAB.
Support for HPR comes from Costco Air Conditioning and Refrigeration, featuring Daikin Air Conditioning Systems. Listing of contractors installing Daikin products, that's D-A-I-K-I-N, at CostcoHawaii.com.
This is The Conversation on statewide member-supported Hawaii Public Radio. Coming up, your backyard quiz. We're headed to Oahu's North Shore for our next segment. And so for our quiz, we are testing your knowledge of the area's iconic signage. Food, gas, shops, beaches. That's what Haleiwa's famous roadside signs advertise to drivers heading up north. And while the displays have become photo ops for gaggles of visitors that visit the North Shore, the signs originally had a much simpler purpose. When the Haleiwa Bypass Road was built in the early 1970s, residents worried that the new route would affect business since it took drivers around Haleiwa. To deal with this concern, the town commissioned an artist to create three signs that advertised what Haleiwa had to offer: food, gas, shops, and beaches. By the early 2000s, the signs had been so heavily vandalized that they were on the verge of being removed entirely. In an act of good faith, the artist behind the original works of art redid their efforts free of charge, restoring the signage to original glory. For today's quiz, we want to know, who is the original artist behind these famous signs? Call 808-941-3689 or toll-free 877-941-3689 if you know the answer. The first one to get it right gets an HPR reusable tote bag.
Support for the Backyard Quiz comes from Nereid Hawaii, which supports nonprofits providing affordable housing for families of agricultural workers and retirees, such as the Kunia Village Development Corporation. NereidHawaii.com.
What is it that makes humans human? The answer is complicated.
One of the things I've been most interested over my career is trying to figure out what is actually pan-human and what is just the particular societies that we grow up in.
The surprising ways in which culture shapes our bodies and our minds. This week on Hidden Brain from NPR.
Beginning Sunday morning at 11.
Support for Hawaii Public Radio comes from the Olson Trust, envisioning a Hawaii where its people are supported by the land, and the land is taken care of by its people. OlsonTrust.com.
A bright spot in a dark time for a North Shore town. That's how Wailua students felt taking home the first ever girls' state championship title in surfing. The Wailua High and Intermediate School surf team won the shortboard and longboard divisions at the Hawaii High School Athletic Association Surfing State Championships earlier this month. It comes as the community is still recovering from devastating flooding caused by back-to-back Kona low storms. HBR's Kevin Allen spoke with a winning shortboarder, Sky Suet, and longboarder, Hanae Rose, as well as their coach, Spencer Suet, who happens to be Sky's dad.
my whole team was there cheering for me, and one of my teammates, Aika, and my mom cheered me up the beach. It was a pretty special moment. And yeah, the whole event, we had broadcasting, and like we had every time like you'd win a heat, you'd go into an interview, and it felt like the big leagues, to be honest. Like some QSs we have here, we don't even have that. So it felt like a big thing, and kind of just really made myself wanting to make my heats and win them so I can like be on the glass. But yeah, it was a super cool experience. And just for my whole team to travel to Hohokipa, some of them, it was their first time surfing there, and it was super cool just learning heat by heat.
Tell me what it was like, I guess, seeing your classmates win too, right? Like, it wasn't just you winning. It was, you guys all brought it. Everyone brought it. All the Bulldogs were going off. So what was it like just watching each other, you know, really succeed again at the first ever surfing state championship?
I think the kids really fed off each other, right, from watching that. A lot of the kids, like Hannah and Sky here, they both surfed shortboarding, longboarding, and bodyboarding, right? And there's some of the boys did that on the boys' side as well. You know, so these guys, we had another girl, Nina Guzman, who was part of our team. We had three girls competing for our team points. But yeah, they just, you know, we were a team. That's what I'm saying. It's a new thing. Surfing such an individual sport. So the team atmosphere, you know, we brought that in there. We cheered each other up. We huddled up before the heats and whatnot. And we just tried to get that vibe going early. You know, when they check in for their jersey, we, you know, we go up there and get their jersey together. And then when they paddle out, we just walk down with our flag and see them out into the lineup. But anyways, as far as the heat by heat, and to watch these girls advance in the heats and win, Sky's shortboard final was first, right? And Sky did really well. She ended really on a really nice wave and right at the horn, and it was just like a really high moment and stuff, and the crowd went crazy. And then Hannah, you surfed two heats after that, maybe one, two
yeah.
heats? Yeah, maybe two heats after Sky's heat. And then that momentum from that just kind of carried on to Hannah's heat. That's probably why Hannah got sent the wave, you know, or then Sky won, you know? But go ahead.
It's the universe.
Yeah. Yeah, Mother Nature just sent me that one. I got super lucky. I think I was actually paddling back out after getting a bad wave, so I was just like, oh, I need something better that's not going to do it at all. And I think that's just every, like, heat, you know, you need those two good waves. So just seeing that wave come and, like, no one else was around me, I was like, oh, this is a perfect chance, perfect opportunity to try and do something good. But, yeah, coming in after that and just with all the girls, it definitely feels different winning with, like, a team instead of just being, like, or winning alone. It was like tears in her eyes. It was crazy, just the laughter. It was a really good feeling.
Yeah, and that's something I think is really special about this team. And, you know, a lot of like high school surf is, right, is it's a team. A lot of professional surfing is an individual sport. It's not necessarily, I mean, they have camps and they have coaches, but, you know, they're not doing it together. And especially going to, right, not your home break. You're on Maui, you're at Ho'okipa Beach Park. Maybe some of you guys have never surfed there or, you know, surfed there very limitedly. I guess, how important was it that you had your team there, you had your fellow classmates, you had your coach, just kind of supporting you, you know? How did that make you feel, especially at a place where maybe you weren't as comfortable as you would be back home?
Pretty much heat by heat, I was just learning kind of where to sit. And if there was like local kids in my heat, I would just kind of base myself off of them as well. And then, yeah, just kind of like learn your lineup spots like throughout your heats. And yeah, the coaches would give us like advice too. And then, yeah, your teammates would just like, we give each other advice as well, like maybe where to sit or like, oh, that was a good wave and stuff like that. But we kind of were just like pushing each other and giving each other confidence during the contest days.
And coach, this one's for you. You're kind of doing a job that is pretty new, to be honest, you know, especially like at a high school level, this idea of a high school surf coach. There's not really a playbook, is there? There's not really a guidebook as much. I mean, what is it like kind of stepping into this role?
You know, I didn't really know what I was signing up for at the beginning. There was a lot of paperwork, I will say that. And just, it's all about safety, you know, and that's the whole thing. While it took a long time for surfing to get approved, I think, was the safety aspect, because it's Mother Nature, it's moving water, these kids got to swim, they got to do the junior lifeguard programs. We got to have a 9-foot rescue board at the beach or during our practices. We got to wear colored jerseys during our practices. We all got to keep an eye on each other. There's got to be a coach in the water per 6 kids and a coach on land per 10 kids. So it was like, it was a perfect number because it was like 6 and 10, it was 16. It was perfect for us. But we did have a whole crew, and some schools didn't have that many, and other schools did, but it worked out really well for us, and hopefully they continue to do this for years going forward. You saw the media for this on Ho'okipa, and those guys did an amazing job putting on the event, as the girls said, the broadcasting, and they have, you know, heat interviews right after the fact, and they're on, like she said, the glass, where they interview, feel like the big leagues, you know, so it's like those guys made these kids feel like superstars and athletes, which they are. I mean, they're going to be, and they already are, and, you know, to bring it back to Waialua is awesome.
Touching on that point, I mean, yeah, you guys are superstars. You guys are athletes. You literally made history. You're historically the first female championship winners in your division. I mean, how does that feel now? You know, it's been a couple of weeks. You let it sink in a little bit. You know, your autograph's getting really good, I'm sure. But how does that feel? And also just kind of touching on the point of, like, you know, you kind of are now, whether you like it or not, an inspiration, right, for other girls your age, especially in, you know, high school surfing. So how does that feel to be kind of at least some, you know, some point of inspiration for young girls coming up who want to do literally what you just did?
I think that everyone should join the surf team. Going into my final, I was up against all seniors, so I was the youngest person in that heat. So anyone can do it, even if you're young, but not. Just believe in yourself and just push through the heat. And getting my last final wave, it comes down to even that. So never giving up to the end, that definitely matters a lot.
Yeah, for sure. Our names are like the first ever like girls shortboard and longboard champs. So it's gonna be like that forever. Like if someone looks back, it's like, oh, those girls are from Waialua, and it means a lot. So I really hope girls that are like coming up in any school on Oahu or any school across the islands, they want to join their school's surf team and maybe just get them in the water, because maybe they don't surf that much, but hopefully this high school surfing pushes them to get themselves in the water, and hopefully they have classmates that they can join the team with. And it's a really fun environment. Like all the girls on the team, we're all friends, and all the boys, like we're just one big group, and it's kind of just like we were on a field trip. Yeah, it was just like,
for sure.
We just went to Maui, got to explore and just surf the waves and meet new people from the other islands. So it was pretty cool.
And speaking of that success, I think, you know, it was a bright point in like a pretty dark time for the town. You know, there were a lot of rains and the floods, the devastating floods that came through. I mean, that was pretty much all right into the lead up of the contest. Was that on your mind? And I mean, I guess, how did you guys work through that?
So since the flood happened in our town, we couldn't have our practices, because we have like two practices a week that our team comes together and we go to the beach and practice. But since all the rivers busted open and the water was so brown and filled with so much bacteria, we had to cancel them. And couple of times we had to come to the school here and just like gather up, and kind of we ran in the field and stuff on the track, and just to like get our team back together and just like lift each other up. And yeah, it was pretty devastating for our hometown, but luckily none of our team members got affected too badly. But we just went to Maui and knew that we were representing Waialua, and we wanted to show people that Waialua has talent. And to come up top with the girls' team like trophy, it meant a lot to us, and we got to bring it back to our school, to our community, and to bring joy and uplift everyone, and it meant a lot.
Yeah, the flooding was definitely traumatic. That night, I just remember like walking out of my house and just seeing the flooding up to like my doorstep, almost coming into our house. So that whole thing was really scary. And just going to Maui after that, I just knew I wanted to like bring it home for Waialua, because our town is so small. But throughout all the volunteer work and just seeing how much like the rubbish we had to clean and everything like that, all the volunteer work, our community is so small but so strong. And it was just really beautiful to see like everyone coming together and giving away the things they wanted. I worked at one of the volunteer centers where they gave a lot of free stuff away to people who needed it, and so much people came and donated from like all sides of the island. So it just felt really great to just bring that back for Waialua and show that to our community. Just surfing out Wailua even this, or Haliva this morning, just everyone's like, oh, we're watching you on the on the broadcast. And it's like, oh, it feels so good. That's to cool. Just bring it back to everyone.
Are you guys like famous now?
No, yeah, I was just at the dentist before this and they're like, oh, congrats on your win. And I was like, they're like, oh, we seen on Instagram. And I was like, oh, thank you. So yeah, means a lot. Yeah, I see a couple people here and there like, oh, congrats to your team. Like, yeah, it's pretty cool. Like, people are interested in surfing because like surfing, like Hawaii is the surfing capital. So it's like North Shore, like everyone surfs and the community's so small, but it comes together for important time. So yeah, it's pretty cool.
Pretty cool. That was Sky Stewart, Hane Rose, and Spencer Stewart from the Wailua High and Intermediate School girls surf team. They spoke with HPR's Kevin Allen about taking home the gold at the first ever Hawaii High School Athletic Association Surfing State Championship.
Support for Hawaii Public Radio comes from Dowling Company. For more than three decades, building housing for the Maui community and committed to building in balance. An HPR supporter since 2001.
This is Ira Glass. On This American Life, we look for stories that are surprising, that you won't hear anywhere else. Like, for example, this one astronaut who went to the moon. You know what he's not into? Space.
Was it cool to float around weightless?
No.
Unexpected stories every week. This American Life.
Beginning Saturday at noon.
Support for HPR comes from Hawaiian Electric, helping residents and businesses be prepared and informed in emergency situations with the Emergency Preparedness Handbook. Download at hawaiianelectric.com/prepare.
Now it's time to direct you to the answer for today's backyard quiz. Earlier in the show, we asked you to name the artist behind Haliva's iconic roadside surfer signs. But first, we wanted to tell you a short story about a deaf Japanese surfboard shaper named Tatsuro Ota. By the early 2000s, the signage had been heavily vandalized to the point where only a tan pair of feet atop a yellowing surfboard remained. Ota took it upon himself to repair one of the signs. Driving from Waikiki to Haliva in a 1986 gold Volvo, he spent $500 of his own money in restoration efforts. When asked why he was doing all of the work, Ota would simply write on a legal yellow pad, "I love Hawaii." Ota's work stood for some 6 months until it was replaced by the sign that still stands today. The new work now displays a wahine standing tall in a barreling wave, and while the signs have changed, the message has stayed the same. Food, gas, shops, and beaches, all in Haliva. We asked you to name the original artist behind the iconic Haliva road signage. We were looking for Carol Beller. And congrats to Jack from Mililani. You got it right. That's our quiz for today. If you have one to share, send it to talkback@hawaiipublicradio.org. A Maui-based choir is bringing the healing power of music to Kapuna Centers in Honolulu next week. Sisters Bobby and Cassie Golden first witnessed how song and dance could cut through cognitive haze more than a decade ago while they were visiting their grandmother who was in hospice care. They held on to that joy of connecting with seniors, and they formed a nonprofit called Keiki Kapuna. Now, their performing arts troupe actually puts on shows monthly at centers around the Valley Isle. The Conversation's Lillian Song spoke with the Golden Sisters. They are 16 and 19 now, but they enjoy performing hits from the past, Elvis, the Beatles, and other classics. We hear from 16-year-old Cassie first.
So Bobby and I have been doing this forever. We've both been playing piano since we were four. Bobby took up guitar. We both play ukulele and we've loved to sing forever. And it began with my grandmother. When my grandmother was actually in hospice, she was a Rockette. She was a professional dancer. So she really felt music. And she had Alzheimer's and I couldn't really communicate with her. And then my sister and I started to realize that when we sang and when we played music, we could really connect with her. And we really saw her face light up for the first time. And so we would go to her hospice center and play for her and sing for her. And that's how we started really doing this. It was originally just Bobby and I and my grandmother. But then there was this little tiny stand-up piano in her hospice center, and all of the other seniors and people who were there, our music really seemed to resonate with them as well. So we started going to other hospice centers and other senior homes, and we started inviting our friends to come with us. So since we were probably like five or six, we've been going to these senior homes and performing for seniors. So that aspect of our group has lasted forever. I mean, for our lives, I can't remember a time when we didn't do it. But then for my eighth grade project for school, I wanted to turn it into a nonprofit. And the reason for this was we began to start wanting to raise money. And we felt like even though we have this group that we really loved where we went and sang for senior homes, it wasn't really for the children. And we wanted to start a real children's choir. That was our dream.
The reason we decided to turn it into a nonprofit in 2023 was because we thought, what if this could be a real performance company instead of just a community service group, you know, and that it could kind of have a twofold mission of one, connecting with and giving back to the seniors and, you know, trying to find music that resonates with them. And two, providing, you know, music and dance lessons and expertise to Keiki on Maui, which is when Lola comes in, who's a family friend of ours, who was expressing her frustration that her school had cut all of their music department. And so she wasn't really getting music education in school. So yeah, we wanted to turn into a 501c3 so that we could raise money to pay for a music director, a choir director, and all the things you need to be part of a performing arts company.
It sounds like you guys have really grown, you know, from when you just started this to now. Could I invite you both to just maybe sing something? Is that possible?
Yes, yeah, so Cassie has to come upstairs. Hello.
<Hi.
laughs> What do you want to do?
Billie Jean?
What about I Will? Let's do some Elvis.
Let's do California Love?
Yeah.
Shall I stay? Would it be a sin if I can't help falling in love with you? Surely to the sea, darling, so it goes. Some things are meant to be. Take my hand, take my whole life too. For I can't help falling in love with you. Yes, I can't help falling in love with you.
Gorgeous. Keiki Kapuna, right now there are 26 members. Just the dedication it's taken, but also it really feels like you have this joy and love for sharing what you do and this connection you have with your senior community there. Can you just share with me perhaps some of your favorite moments? Let's start with Cassie.
Oh, it's such a good question. It's always so meaningful. After every show, we go out and we pass out flowers to all of our audience members, which is gives us a chance to connect to them, talk story. And it's really wonderful. They sing along to our songs. Sometimes they're crying. Sometimes I feel like I'm going to start crying. And sometimes I do on the way home. But interaction that has meant a lot to me is there's one man at Halemakua who has taught me like 4 handshakes. And he can't really communicate or talk to me. Sometimes he'll type things into his phone to say things. But he teaches me like cool handshakes that he knew when he was younger, and he'll show me how to do it. And I guarantee you, of the 26 members of Keiki Kapuna, they all know this man because he's just so kind and loving. And his name is Kingston. He'll shout out, like cheer for us while we're singing. And it's a really special interaction. I mean, Bobby, you know him.
Oh yeah, I know Kingston. He's the best. My freshman year, I was 14. Feels like a very long time ago. I met a woman named Mona in, I want to say, Halemakua as well. And she had pretty severe dementia. She asked me my name a lot of times. And then during the show, I noticed that she was singing every lyric to every song. And beautifully, we could hear her voice coming out. And it was such a beautiful voice. I mean, it came out of nowhere. And my sister and I were looking at each other during the show like, who is that? She's incredible. And afterward, I ended up talking to her and I asked her some of her favorite songs, and one of them was Oh Danny Boy. And now I have a video that's very special to me of Mona and I singing in harmony Oh Danny Boy while I play guitar. And she knows every lyric to these songs and to Oh Danny Boy, a song I didn't know before she asked me if I could play it. That is also now a song that I love. And it was just so special to see the way she lights up, you know, when she starts singing. I mean, she comes so alive. And I've never forgotten that. I don't think I ever will.
We also once met a woman who pulled up her sleeve and showed us the numbers on her arm from the Holocaust. And that is definitely one that I will never forget either. And I got to talk to her and listen to her story. And I think that honestly, I'm so grateful to be able to do this because the elderly have so much wisdom, more than I realized before I was doing this, that they really have so much to tell us about, and it's incredible. I'm so grateful for every interaction I get to have.
So Keiki Kapuna, it goes both ways. You are sharing your talents, and while you're there with the seniors, you're also getting so much wisdom or just love being fed into you. And in turn, you guys are able to share that with the people around you. So it's a wonderful thing you're doing. What is it that you would like to leave our listeners with?
I just want to say something about all of the different people that are connected and working together to make this organization run. So starting at kind of the youngest, we've had 4-year-olds in the group, and we probably have another 5 people between the ages of 4 and 8. I feel like I've gotten experience working with that, with younger kids. Then we have middle schoolers, high schoolers. I'm a college student. There are people who are in college that continue to engage with our group that used to be members of Keiki Kapuna. Then we have my mom helping out, who's the executive director at the moment. We have Julia Golding, who's our music director, and Jackie Dowsett, who is our dance instructor. And so, you know, all of these people in that generation who, although their titles only specify, you know, chorus, dance, director, share so much else with us about, you know, Jackie is a professional dancer and the kids have learned so much about from her about what it means to be in the dance world. And my mom was an actress, and so we've heard a lot from her. Julia works at Seabury, a school that a lot of us go to. So I think having like kind of a connection there can be really helpful. And she's so talented and she's worked with very serious choirs. And then, of course, at the top, we have people in the senior homes ranging from 60, you know, to 100. So we're literally through this group, like what it takes to make it run and what it brings together is people ranging from age 4 to 100. It's like the whole century, you know, and I just can't think of another way that that would ever have happened for me. And I can't stress enough how much I've learned through working with all these people.
I first would just like to say I agree with everything that my sister just said. It's crazy how I learn from the four-year-old and I also learn from the 100-year-old. I think it's wonderful to be surrounded by just so much life, so much variety of life. The final thing that I would say is that I think what I've really learned through this group is like a lot of people see community service as a chore, like picking up trash on the side of the highway, which, you know, those kinds of service activities need to be done. But I just like to say, like, I'm so grateful to be a part of Keiki Kapuna because I feel like I get to do this community service and it helps me. We took something that we really enjoy doing and we are doing our community service with that. And I don't think community service should be seen so much as a thing of a chore, which is how I saw it until I started doing this, because you can use the things you love to create things in the world. And I'm so grateful to have had so many people help us with this along the way. And I'm so grateful to get to be a part of Keiki Kapuna.
Well, Bobby and Cassie Golden, thank you so much for the time you gave to us on the conversation today. It's wonderful meeting you, and just all the best to you as you come to Honolulu for your concert performances.
Thank you so much. We're so happy to be on the show.
And that was Bobby and Cassie Golden talking to HPR's Lillian Song. Their group is called Keiki Kapuna, and they will be performing in Honolulu next week at Craigside Waikiki, the Plaza Waikiki, and the Plaza Punch Bowl. And we'll leave you with some thoughts from a few of the members of Keiki Kapuna and their rendition of Here Comes the Sun.
Hi, my name is Farah. I'm 6 years old, and I've been in Keiki Kapuna for 2 years. And my favorite thing to do in Keiki Kapuna is sing One Love with the big girls around me.
Hi, my name is Daniel Shad. I am 10 years old, and I've been in Keiki Kapuna for 1 year. Something I can really remember is our first show, because I was not sure how it was going to go, but seeing the happy faces on the audience afterward was really great.
Hi, my name is Phoebe Golding, and I'm 14 years old, and I've been in Keiki Kapuna for a year. My favorite memory of being in Keiki Kapuna is when we were halfway through our spring ho'ike, and we were in the breakdown part of I'm a Believer, and I looked around at everybody, and they're like dancing and having fun and clapping, and it just felt like such a community-based moment, and it was just so joyous to watch.
Hello, my name is Kaya Dekun. I'm 8 years old and I've been in Keiki Kapuna for 4 years. And one of my favorite memories was when after the show we were passing out flowers, I went to this lady and she said, "You sounded great." And she started holding my hand and said, "I think that if you guys sing Hawaii Aloha, it would sound great." And so we did. And now that's like the song where everybody just joins in and it's in the end and it's so fun. That's my favorite memory. Bye.
6, 7, 8. Here comes the sun. Doo-doo-doo. Here comes the sun. It's all right. Little darling, it's been a long, cold, lonely winter. Little darling, it feels like years since it's been here.
Wasn't that just the best? That is it for us for this Aloha Friday. Coming up next week, a call-in show about storm preps as the chance of hurricanes are forecast for our region. Got questions or comments? Record something. Call or talk back line 808-792-8217 or email us or hit us up on social media. Listen back to our shows on the conversation page of our website. Find us as a podcast on Spotify or Apple. Our program is produced by Maddie Bender, Lillian Song, and Kevin Allen with support from Savannah Harriman-Pote and the HPR Digital Team. Backyard Quiz theme, John DeMello theme music, Gypsy 808. I'm Catherine Cruz. Join us on Monday. Pick up the conversation.